found yourself completely unprepared for some huge task, only to find this like inner strength you never knew you had? Now, what if that task wasn't just, you know, big, but involved running a major national newspaper and maybe taking on the U.S. government? Welcome to The Deep Dive. Today, we're diving into the incredible life of Katharine Graham, through her own words in her Pulitzer Prize-winning memoir, Personal History. It's really more than just her story. It's about unexpected leadership, a pretty profound personal transformation, and honestly, the vital role of a free press.
Absolutely. And our goal here, our mission for this deep dive, is to really unpack how this woman, who started out defined by, well, incredible privilege, but also these really ingrained societal expectations, mm-hmm. how she became one of the most powerful and, frankly, courageous figures of her time. We want to pull out these key insights on resilience, leadership that's really forged in adversity, and the lessons she offers about protecting democracy itself.
That's right. And our source is personal history itself. Katharine Graham's own very candid, very sweeping account. It works both as this intimate memoir, but also, you know, crucial historical record of American journalism, politics, from the 30s right through to the 90s. So to really get this transformation, we need to start at the beginning, her early years. What was that world like? How did it kind of set the stage?
Well, she was born into, as you said, immense privilege. Her father, Eugene Meyer, he bought the Washington Post. Her mother, Agnes Meyer, was this brilliant, but as Katharine herself says, often quite intimidating intellectual figure. So you have this environment of high intellectual rigor, yes, but also a certain emotional distance. And Katharine mentions this often, this feeling of inadequacy that it instilled in her, something she battled for a long, long time. But even then, you see glimpses. She worked in journalism early on at Vassar's, the San Francisco News. So the seeds were there, you know.
Right, the seeds were there, but the soil, the societal expectations for women back then were just so different. How did that play out for her specifically?
Oh, profoundly. She writes very openly about being, and this is her phrase, deeply conditioned to doubt her own worth and defer to others, particularly men. It wasn't just a feeling, it was the air she breathed, really. The 1940s, the 50s, women, especially of her class, were expected to channel their energies into supporting their husbands.
Yeah.
Her own capabilities, whatever they might have been then, were sort of overshadowed, subordinated. That was the norm.
That combination, the privilege, the inadequacy, the societal pressure, it makes her marriage seem almost inevitable in its complexity. Tell us about Philip Graham. He sounds like quite the figure.
He really was. Dazzling is the word often used. Brilliant Harvard law grad, magnetic personality, rose very quickly in Washington. And crucially, he became her father's chosen successor at the Post. Katharine is incredibly honest in the book about how she willingly, almost eagerly, stepped back. She became this prominent Washington hostess, supporting his career. That was her role. But behind the scenes, you know, it was harrowing. Philip suffered from severe manic depressive illness. We'd call it bipolar disorder now. His behavior became increasingly erratic, destructive. It led to a very public, very humiliating affair. It was deeply painful for her.
Wow. That sounds incredibly difficult to navigate, especially in that era, in that public sphere. So what was the final shattering event that pushed her into this role she never, ever expected or wanted?
The absolute turning point, the emotional core of the book, really, is Philip's suicide in August 1963. It was tragic, sudden. And in the middle of that profound grief, Katharine, who was 46, with zero business experience, she faced this stark choice, sell the paper or take over. Despite what she describes as paralyzing self-doubt, this lifetime of feeling inadequate, she chose to take over. It wasn't ambition driving her. It was this powerful sense of duty to her family, to her father's legacy. She has an amazing quote about it. What I essentially did was to put one foot in front of the other, shut my eyes, and step off the edge. The surprise was that I landed on my feet.
Landed on her feet. Barely, perhaps, but then she had to learn to run. So she steps into this role, the only woman at the table, probably terrified. What were those first few years actually like, learning the ropes in that environment?
Oh, incredibly difficult. She faced huge skepticism from executives, board members, pretty much everyone. She's very candid about how she fumbled initially. She admits she was often overly reliant on the men around her, often felt patronized, excluded from those informal, you know, old boys networks where decisions get made. It was systemic sexism, plain and simple. But the key thing was her determination. She just resolved to learn. She dove into everything. Newsroom stuff, finance, balance sheets, the works. It really is that classic theme playing out. transformation through adversity. It was learning under fire, basically, building competence bit by bit.
And presumably she couldn't do it entirely alone. Were there key people, key relationships that helped her find her fitting during that really intense learning curve?
Yes, absolutely. And one relationship stands out as truly pivotal. That was her decision to hire Ben Bradley as executive editor.
Ah, Bradley, right.
Yeah, he was, well, a force. Yeah. Tough, ambitious, maybe a little bit swaggering. He wanted to make the Post a national paper, a powerhouse. Their partnership became legendary. It was built on fundamentally mutual respect, even if it was sometimes contentious. And this shared commitment to great journalism?
That publisher-editor relationship seems so key.
It's crucial. She provided the backing, the shield, the resources. He drove the newsroom. And through working with him and others, she slowly, surely built her own confidence, started trusting her own judgment, started asserting her authority, even when it was uncomfortable.
Okay, so she's building this foundation, this confidence, this understanding of the business, but then come the real tests, the crucibles, the Pentagon Papers, Watergate. This is where everything escalates, right?
Right. This is where her personal journey and the fate of the newspaper and maybe even the country really collide. First up, the Pentagon Papers in 1971. So the New York Times publishes parts of this secret government study on Vietnam, gets shut down by a court order. Then somehow, the Post gets its own copy.
Incredible. The pressure must have been immense.
Unbelievable. She describes this intense internal debate. The lawyers are screaming, don't do it, financial ruin, prison, you know, the works. The journalists led by Bradley are arguing, it's our duty, the public has to know.
Mm-hmm.
And the final call, it rested solely on her shoulders. She's on the phone, knowing everything that's at stake, and she gives the order. Go ahead and publish.
Wow, just wow.
Yeah. And that decision, which led to that landmark Supreme Court victory for Tress freedom, that was a massive turning point for her as a leader. It solidified her resolve.
So that experience, that trial by fire with the Pentagon Papers, it must have prepared her in a way for the even bigger storm that was Watergate, right? She'd exercised that courage muscle, as you put it.
Exactly. That's a great way to put it. That muscle was strengthened. So when Watergate breaks in 72, she's maybe more ready, though the pressure was arguably even greater, more sustained. Her role then became absolutely critical in backing Woodward and Bernstein, these two young reporters. The Nixon administration threw everything at them and at the Post.
What kinds of things?
Oh, veiled threats, direct challenges to the Post's TV station licenses, which were the company's cash cows, really constant public attacks, trying to discredit them. Graham essentially acted as a shield. She absorbed the political heat, deflected the threats, kept allocating resources, and crucially, kept signaling her unwavering support for the investigation. She truly believed in what they were doing, in the paper's role. She talked about fairness being the bottom line. And that, she said, I think that's why we were supported. That pursuit of truth impartially was their defense.
It really underscores that whole idea of the press as the fourth estate, holding power accountable. What broader lessons can we draw from her actions then for today's world, today's media landscape?
Well, it's a powerful reminder, isn't it, of the press's fundamental role in a democracy. Graham's decisions show this deep belief that a free, independent press is essential. It's democracy's guardian, even when, especially when it faces hostility from the government. Her story shows how individual courage, rooted in principle, can serve these larger democratic goals. It's about protecting the public's right to know, even when it's incredibly costly or dangerous. That lesson feels more relevant than ever, honestly.
Absolutely. So beyond the publisher role, beyond Watergate, her journey was also deeply personal, about finding her own voice, defining herself. How did she see her own transformation looking back later in life?
By the end, she'd really arrived. She wasn't just the publisher. She was this respected global figure. And she had this really interesting grounded take on feminism, born directly out of her own experience. She said, to me, feminism is to be strong. It's not an anti-male thing at all. It's about being a human being. It's about being yourself.
That's powerful.
It really is. It speaks directly to her own struggle, overcoming that internal sense of inadequacy, but also pushing against those very real external barriers she faced as a woman in that world. Her transformation was about becoming authentically herself.
So thinking about our listeners, what are the universal lessons here, the takeaways from Katharine Graham's life that resonate today, no matter who you are or what you do?
Oh, there are so many. First, just on personal leadership, her story is this incredible case study in overcoming imposter syndrome, not by waiting for the fear to go away, but by acting despite the fear. And lifelong learning. I mean, she basically started a whole new career at 46, learned an entire industry. It shows you're never too old to grow, to pivot, and the importance of backing your team, trusting them, shielding them. That's huge.
Right, and for handling crises.
Her approach is really instructive. Weighing risks carefully, yes, but consulting experts, and crucially, anchoring decisions in core values, in the institution's principles. That's key for crisis management.
And gender dynamics? Still relevant, sadly.
Definitely. Her story still speaks volumes about navigating male-dominated spaces. Persistence, demonstrating competence, building strategic alliances, these are still vital tools. She truly lived that idea that courage is a muscle.
Mm-hmm.
It gets stronger the more you use it, the more you push past that vulnerability.
It's such a compelling story, a really profound deep dive into this life filled with unexpected turns, immense pressure, and ultimately, incredible courage. Personal history isn't just her story. It really is this testament to how personal growth, especially when forced by adversity, can have such a massive impact. Her journey, from someone riddled with self-doubt to this titan of media, it reminds you that real strength often comes from acknowledging vulnerability, and that leadership isn't a destination. It's this constant process of learning, adapting, especially under fire.
Absolutely. And her legacy just powerfully illustrates that integrity, having the courage to make those tough calls for something bigger than yourself that's the real bedrock of influence. She demonstrated time and again how individual choices, even the terrifying ones, can literally shape history and protect democratic values for everyone. It's a timeless lesson in principled leadership.
So for you, our listener, maybe a final thought to consider. In our current world, with information coming at us from everywhere, how do we spot and how do we support the kind of journalistic integrity, the kind of courageous leadership that Katharine Graham really embodied? And maybe more personally, when you're facing those overwhelming pressures or just your own internal doubts, what might be your true strike? That decisive move guided by your principles that lets you land on your feet and maybe even build something lasting.